I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We explore the cultural and physical development of life in the modern city through the lens of history and the context of community. Today's show, The Star Bar, brought to you by Perkins & Will and Hirsch Bedner Associates. The Star Bar gets its moniker from the intersecting streets that at one time eponymously gave way to the naming of one of Atlanta's most unique communities, Little Five Points. L5P is widely known for grit, grunge, coffee records, mustaches, and all things indie. And there are few spots more Little Five than the Star Community Bar. Beer-soaked and downright dirty in a good way, this rite of passage is a fixture, weathering changes in politics, popular culture, music, and mayhem since the 1960s, becoming the go-to spot for loud music, cheap drinks, and good times. And for our guest today, the Star Bar is more than all that. It's part of their identity. The Star Bar is, at its heart, a dive bar and caters to those of us who like our fun a little bit more on the raucous side. But it is also a spot for passion and true love to blossom. In that way, it represents a safe haven that is, on one hand, culturally alternative, while simultaneously being socially egalitarian. In short, it's a damn fine little joint. My guests today are former Star Bar owner, David Haney, and the ever fabulous DJ Romeo Cologne.
Hello.
Romeo.
Hi, Gene.
I would love for you to share with our listeners a bit about you and your personal history, and then we'll get into where our histories mingle up a bit.
Romeo is an invention of myself, David Pierce, which I'm like the alter ego or whatever you call it, you know, mild-mannered guy in the background. Not really. If you know me, I'm an insouciant malcontent and subversive. So Romeo was really a way to take a lot of the flack from my creative endeavors.
And how did you come up with him, or how did he manifest within you?
Well, it turned out to be a parody, you know, of a 70s DJ. But I actually was very good at it when I started DJing myself. I had my very first event that was all mine when I started my color box gig in 1994. Before that, I'd hired other DJs and not necessarily been the main DJ or spinner. So I acquired some skills of my own, and I could do that at the Star Bar. So that's where I kind of segued from promoter into this character that I created. And I used to live in Athens, and this came to me in a dream. People laugh, oh, sure, you're making that up. But it really did. Of course, I have some very vivid dreams, but we won't go there right now. this name, Romeo Cologne, came to me. And I had a similar vision the same day. This was a vision, like a waking dream, or hallucination, I guess I may call it. Psychosis, who knows? No doctor was there, so it could have just been a vision. And I saw these records in this dumpster. See, I was a visual artist, and I still am. I make assemblages, 3D collages out of found objects. On my little routes to all the dumpsters in Athens, I envisioned one of these dumpsters filled full of old records. And sure enough, the next day I go there, and it's filled full of records. I start pulling them out. I just had a little bicycle at the time, and you know, I could only, they're pretty heavy, so I only take maybe 20 at a time on my bicycle home. And I did this until late at night. I got in the dumpster, emptied out, and every record that I got, I swear, is still in my set list today. Some superior DJs must have died. Maybe his family gave away the records. I don't know.
What are a few of the ones that you found that day and that are still with us?
Like Instant Funk has a Got My Mind Made Up, which is a really great song. Brothers Johnson, Get the Funk Out of My Face. Of course, my favorite, Barclay's Holy Ghost. Now, these were like classics, too, but no funk. They've got very little airplay back in the day. They're some of my favorite tunes.
When you came to the Star Bar, was that just like a natural progression, or did you choose it? Or
I knew some people that were working there, and I went in just to pop my head in one afternoon, and I had a vision in my head of the room filled full of people dancing. It was just the right scale I was looking for like a gig for myself. And I thought, well, you know, it can't hurt to ask. And we agreed on Tuesday, because I wanted a night where I could promote to bar and restaurant and industry people. Because, you know, they work during the weekend while the good entertainment is. And when they're off, there's hardly anything for them to do. And so I wanted to have a night that would embrace the industry people. And that worked out real well for Tuesdays. And right about the time, it was right before the Olympics in 94. And Atlanta was building up to that, you know, getting a lot of business. And our business was picking up, and it was like doubling every week. And we saw it coming. And then it was just a phenomenal time, you know.
It was. I think I moved here in 95, and I'd love to hear what you think about the people that you've influenced. I know one personal story. We came to see you one Tuesday night at the Star Bar, a couple of guys going to have a good time and meet some girls. And I ran into this girl on the dance floor, and I was with a buddy of mine, Tom. And I met this girl named Cresta, who I'd met once before for like a minute. And I said, don't move, stay right here. And I ran to the bar and I grabbed him. I was like, you got to meet this girl. I think this might be your wife.
In recollection, it's amazing how quickly those moments move. I mean, I remember very specifically you coming to me and saying, you got to meet this girl. And, you know, it's not unusual for you and I to have had conversations about a girl being attractive, or, you know, she's cute or she's nice, or, you know, this or that. But I very specifically remember your words of, you got to meet this girl, meaning specifically you need to meet this girl. And something rung a little different that night, and you took me over to meet her, and she and I talked, and I'd say we hit it off. Definitely there was chemistry. We also had a little bit of jibing back and forth with each other, and couldn't get more than a foot away from each other for the rest of the night. And then obviously on nights after that, very quickly we started dating. And there was definitely something different about it from the get-go. And I think that is unique and fun, because not only how quickly that happened and how different that experience was, but because it was at the Star Bar and how unique of a place that was, to have that as a backdrop for meeting a wife is unique and ironic and funny and all those things at the same time. So it's certainly nice memories to look back on.
Well, we started with sort of folk music, I guess, acoustic music. We had people like Michelle Malone and Kristen Hall, Kodak Harrison, Kristen Hall, Sean Mullins, folks like that. And that was great. But Eddie's Attic opened, and that was actually a better venue for them, although they did continue to play. Then we got into alternative rock. We had bands like the Wild West Picture Show, Urban Shake Dancers, Big Fish Ensemble. And then we had blues people like Felix and the Cats and Willie Hill and Juju Root and Interstate Brickface and all the people that played Northside Tavern now. And like I said, people continued to play. And then we got into doing the alternative country, and that's where the Redneck Underground started hanging out. We thought we should do different types of music all the time, because if you just do one type of music, I think people get kind of bored with it. And, you know, some people, like a jazz crowd, comes out and has two drinks. Folk people are often that same way. So we wanted people that like to get down a little bit, because that's how we made our money. So that's why we went with the more raucous sort of music. And that's pretty much how that happened.
It worked.
It worked well, at least for the first 11 years.
And then we're jumping back in history for a moment to the name.
The Star Bar?
Yeah.
Well, it's that went round and round. Some people thought it came from the Star Club in Hamburg, Germany. That's not true. Actually, the little 5 points have been known from the 30s and 40s as the Star Community. And the full name of the Star Bar is the Star Community Bar, and that's where that came from as a historic reference to the area of town where we were.
The bar was a bit of a metamorphosis in its own right, going from a CNS bank. And parts of the structure of that bank were used and are still intact today. Tell us a couple of those.
Well, there were a lot of good features. It had an atrium ceiling, which made the place sound good for music, and it had a couple vaults which we couldn't move, so we turned one of them into the Grace Vault, which is the Alva Shrine, which is still there.
How did that happen?
A couple years before, my partner Marty and I had gone on a wild road trip, and neither one of us had ever bought a souvenir in our life, and we bought souvenirs every place we stopped in Tennessee. It was called the Tacky Tour of Tennessee eventually, and a lot of the stuff was Alva stuff. We ended up in Memphis, then in Tupelo, and anyway, we filled up a trunk of a 67 Cadillac I had with Alva's memorabilia, and when we got back to town, we would show it to people and charge them a quarter to see Grace, Grace trunk, which was the trunk of my car, and we would light it up, and we had Alva's music, and we would sell things. So when we got the Star Bar, we couldn't figure out what to do with the vault, and so it came to us that it should be Grace Vault. So we took all this basically crap that we had collected on the road, and then people started donating stuff.
You mean treasure?
Treasure, that kind of crap. And then people started donating things. We had a Finster Alva's. We had a speaker, supposedly from the drive-in theater that Alva's used to rent to take his guys. I had a Humes High School yearbook with Alva's in it. Actually, that was Alva's probably first autograph. And it just grew and grew. And, of course, being plumbers, which I was a plumber, we painted a toilet and put a gold toilet at the end for a throne for the king. And it was all done in gold lame and red carpets and blue velvet. And we had actually had a separate shrine to Gladys that somebody had donated. And we had votive candles so you could, you know, light the candles and pray, say a prayer. And there was also a free jukebox with 100 Alva's tunes on it inside the vault.
Yeah, it's super cool. When did it go from being like a joke to something of worship?
Well, I suppose when I put the slot in where you can make donations, and when people start putting in about $150 a month, you take it seriously. And people were serious. We got serious in a fun way. We got money from Hong Kong. This is before the Euro. Germany, Russia, Japan. There was money from all over the world, and of course we would clear it out every once in a while and say, wow, this is great, free money. And then we'd leave seed money on the floor so people would know what to do with the money, like dump it in there. And of course we would keep getting things and buy things and keep it up. And we had 3 televisions in there, it's like the king did in his TV room, so with the turn to the national news. And we just had a whole bunch of fun with it.
I'd like to thank my guests today, David Haney and DJ Romeo Colon.
Thank you so much, Gene.
Thanks a lot.
And Tom Bledsoe for that cameo appearance. Of course, we'd also like to thank our sponsors, Perkins & Will and Hirsch Bednar Associates, and you, our faithful fans. Enjoy the tail end of summer, and we'll see you next month.